Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman.
For your minimum daily adult requirements of sanity.
Friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live this morning from our affiliate in Seattle, Talk 1090. Last night, my plane out of Manchester, New Hampshire to Chicago was 2.5 hours late, and when I got to Chicago, my plane to Portland had already left. But there was one going to Seattle, and thanks so much to Tom Paul and all the great folks here at Talk 1090 in Seattle for, you know, called Paul on his cell phone at home at night, and I don't know, it must have been midnight or something, and said, "Can I get a studio?" Yeah, no problem. It was wonderful. It was wonderful. So we got in about 2 o'clock in the morning, and it is now 9 o'clock in the morning Pacific time, and we are here and we are on the air. And boy, the headlines and the stories I'm seeing, everything from the conspiracy theories to the shock and awe to, it's no big deal. It's fascinating. What happened with the New Hampshire primary yesterday? Haroon Sadiq, writing in the Independent in the UK, the one of the largest nationwide, more or less progressive newspapers, did racist voters cost Obama the primary? They're positing the question. If a pollster calls you up and says, "Would you vote for an African American?" People's say, "No, I'm not a racist. Sure, I'd do it." But when they get into the ballot box, they won't push the button. So that's the UK's point of view. Then there's conspiracy theories flying around here. The media story seems to be, broadly speaking, that Hillary got human a day before, you know, breaking down, as it were. And as I pointed out a couple times on the program yesterday, you know, when George W. Bush and his dad and Colin Powell and Defense Secretary Gates shed a tear, it's viewed as a marvelous thing. And maybe it was. Maybe she just, you know, had a strong organization there. I'll tell you, doing Radio Row in Manchester yesterday, as most of you heard, I was looking for an even mix of candidates. And it was a madhouse there. And there was just people coming through constantly who were, you know, politicians, ex-politicians, famous folks, ex-famous folks, whatever, but who were there on behalf of specific candidates. And Dennis Kucinich showed up on behalf of himself, and David Bonner came by for about 10 minutes on behalf of John Edwards, but there was such a line, I mean, I didn't even put half of them on the air, of people who were there to speak on behalf of Hillary Clinton. The machine was there, and it was working. So, you know, the conspiracy theories ranging from it was the Tom Bradley effect to the machines were hacked. I think it's just, you know, Hillary Clinton did a good job of campaigning in New Hampshire. It's a very retail politics there. You get out, you get personal, you get to know people. And frankly, another big story is on the Republican side that Mitt Romney, two losses in a row. This guy putting in all kinds of his own money into this thing. And John McCain taking it. And, of course, now it's going to go on. There's a few more primaries to go, as they say. There's a long way to go, in fact. And we'll see where this all, you know, how this all plays out and where it goes. But interesting times. Very interesting times. Huckabee flip-flops on birthright citizenship. The Washington Times reporting yesterday that he said that he wanted to amend the Constitution so that if you're born in the United States, that doesn't automatically make you a citizen, or at least if you're born in the United States to an illegal alien. This is the Pat Buchanan position, that if you're in this country, he actually doesn't think you need to amend the Constitution, that if you're in this country illegally and you have a child, that child is not a citizen, that the 14th Amendment, which says that in order to be a citizen, you must be born in the United States, or that if you're born in the United States, you are a citizen, that the 14th Amendment implies, suggests, presupposes, assumes that you are in this country legally, and that if you are in this country illegally, that the 14th Amendment wouldn't apply because it's part of the rule of law, and if you're here illegally, you're not covered by the rule of law or whatever, you know, something like that. I guess that's the rationale. But I believe the Supreme Court has ruled on this, and I believe it's certainly considered to be the case that if you're here, however you got here, You know, even if you're like Michelle Malkin, you know, whose parents came over here to give birth to her so that she could have U.S. citizenship, call them anchor babies or whatever, it's the law. So Huckabee, it was reported in the Washington Times that he had said, no, we got to change that. As I was changing plane, actually, as I was in Manchester waiting, 3-hour wait for the flight, I saw him on TV saying, no, wait a minute, I didn't say that, and that newspaper shouldn't have reported that, and I got to think about this, and I don't know. Giuliani in the Wall Street Journal op-ed on Homeland Security. This is so sad. It's like this is all they've got. This is all these guys have. 9 separate references to September 11th. And basically, he says, this is a quote from Rudy. He says, one reason New York City was able to withstand the 9/11 attack was that we were prepared to meet the 21st century security threats. Right. And while we didn't anticipate the specific scenario of 9/11, the constant practice, the relentless follow-up from actual agencies certainly helped in its aftermath. Well, the fire chief, Jim Riches, deputy fire chief who lost his son in the Trade Center, has a somewhat different perspective. He says, and I quote, lives were lost because of the lack of preparation and because of Giuliani's lack of leadership. This is a guy who spent 16 days in a coma after the attacks due to respiratory failure. He says, all Giuliani did was run that day and get on TV and provide a calming influence for the United States of America, and they made him a hero. And I would add, the reason he was running around is because his command center, where he should have been, was on fire because it was building 7 of the World Trade Center, and he put it there because he got a $100,000 campaign contribution in exchange for doing so, or so it appears. And Rudy Giuliani's strategy of he's going to start in Florida and, you know, we'll see where it goes. I don't know. I think Progress is a summary, this, you know, broad summary of the news here from the Center for American Progress over at thinkprogress.org. Some of the thoughts on this, CNN's blog. President Bush had a powerful effect on New Hampshire's Republican primary. Roughly half of GOP voters had a negative opinion of the Bush administration, and those voters significantly went to Arizona Senator John McCain by a 2-1 margin. Of those with a positive opinion of the administration, 37% voted for Mitt Romney. So that's interesting. Here you have some polls and some pundits suggesting that the reason that John McCain won the primary in New Hampshire was because Republicans hate Bush. Record turnout, by the way, 453,000 ballots cast. The previous record was 369,000 in 2000. This is not insignificant. And we've got the Iranian high speedboats coming up against our warships in the Persian Gulf. And, this has got a lot of us scratching our heads. A lot of people wondering, you know, what's the deal with this? You know, what happened here? What could have happened here? What might be the genesis of this? Where did this come from? Because on the same day, and this is up at the top of commondreams.org, I encourage you to read it, Agence France-Presse article. The headline report, this is a new report that just was released, about going back to the Vietnam War. Report reveals Vietnam War hoaxes and faked attacks. And I think, frankly, the point two headline on Common Dreams says the whole thing, or suggests that in some cases perhaps we were faking attacks. Now, was it because they were listening to our intelligence or what? I mean, the bottom line, I guess, is what's going on in the Persian Gulf? There's a lot of people scratching their head. Is Iran really stupid enough to try to provoke a military escalation, a military confrontation, you know, with a little boat in the Persian Gulf? Or were we stepping over a line there? Were we in their territorial waters? Or what? You know, there are so many stories flying around on this thing. It's going to be a while before we figure this one out. So anyhow, I'd love to hear your thoughts on what happened yesterday and on the news over the night. And we'll get into that right after this. this opportunity for you to support your local radio station by supporting their sponsors. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Our number, 866-303-2270. You can drop into our live chat room. I'm there at tomhartman.com. Just click the chat link. It'll get you there. And also our blog and message boards are over there, as well as the blog over at airamerica.com. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Exposing the con in conservative. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Just like everything else, those old crazy dreams just kind of came way down. Oh, but ain't that America for you and me? Ain't that America?
Indeed it is. It's America. The Tom Hartman Radio Program brought to you by the 200,000 members of SEIU 1199. Working to make health care a right, not a privilege, here in the United States. A whole lot of speculation about what happened in New Hampshire yesterday. The conventional wisdom had been, and many of the polls, obviously, that Barack Obama was going to win the Democratic nomination. But an awful lot of it depended on independent voters, and it looks like a lot of those independent voters decided to vote for John McCain. That might have had something to do with it. It could have been that as the attacks, I guess, is the, for lack of a better word, on Hillary Clinton seemed to be picking up steam, that there was a sympathy effect. It could have been that the humanity of her was plain and visible in the so-called crying incident, that got her outside the box of the advisors. You know, the problem that John Kerry had, frankly, is that he was all the time being so micromanaged by people who were, and I don't think his own personality of being kind of the Boston Brahmin and, you know, very thoughtful and reserved guy to begin with, helped a whole lot. But you didn't see much humanity or much of his humanity coming through in that campaign. And arguably much of that same thing was happening with the Hillary Clinton campaign. So anyhow, let's get to your thoughts on this. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Joseph in Arcata, California. Hey, Joseph, welcome to the program.
Yes, good morning, Tom. Hey, I hopefully the sleep deprivation will be made up for by frequent flyer miles.
There you go. Yeah.
I hope so, too.
Hey,
I just wanted to say, I think you were dead on with the very first thing you said today, Tom, that Hillary ran a much more aggressive grassroots campaign, and that in this instance, Barack did not match her or was simply overwhelmed.
Yeah, yeah. And there might have been some a certain sense of, okay, we've got it now, you know, resting on their laurels. Although, you know, I don't know. I'm not inside either campaign. All I saw was we had in that hotel in Manchester, you know, this huge concentration of media out in front of the hotel. There were three or four satellite trucks. All the TV networks were there. You couldn't get down the street because of all the satellite trucks. In the lobby of the hotel, it was all set up. Sam Donaldson was coming and going. Dan Rather was there. I mean, kind of the old guys, but all the media was there. And so you would expect all the candidate surrogates to be there. And as I said, person after person after person coming through was there to this ambassador, that former, you know, whatever, was there to speak on behalf of Hillary Clinton. The only person that I saw all day long who was there to speak on behalf of John Edwards was David Bonnier, his campaign manager. And frankly, I'm not sure I saw. I don't think we had anybody on the program yesterday speaking on behalf of Barack Obama. I could be wrong. That's my recollection.
I noticed that. I've been listening. I'm, by the way, a first-year listener and a first-time caller, and really been enthused by this program. And I noticed the exact same thing. In fact, it seems typical of the trend to me, which is that the media really wants to get behind certain candidates. And
well, I'm just telling you, they weren't there. You know, I mean, I was there amidst all the media. And if Barack Obama surrogates had shown up or he had shown up, I'd say, hey, sit down and let's have a conversation. But Hillary Clinton's, you call it machine, maybe that has a negative connotation to it, but the people who were there in support of her were there in large numbers. They were readily available. They were totally accessible. And frankly, they were very personable. I mean, there's some very good people. You heard them on the program here. We had several of them on in the first hour. And I think my guess is that if it was going that way in that epicenter of national media, it was also going that way, you know, statewide with media all over the state. Joseph, I got to move along. Thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. BJ in Tacoma, Washington. Hey, BJ, what's up?
Good morning, Tom. How you doing? Welcome to Washington.
Thank you. It's great to be back here.
When I was watching it all day yesterday, you kind of saw Hillary put it. I mean, she basically pulled out all the stops. And I think that her emotion was real on Monday or was it Sunday or whatever like that. But that's only going to play one time. And when she needed that, it was right before February 5th. I think Barack's message is really reaching everyone. And
his message is essentially a message of it's time for a change, it's time for new leadership.
Yeah.
She's adopting that language.
But I think also, because everyone's saying change leadership, but it's also, he's saying it's not just an individual. And everything Hillary always says, you listen to her, except for last night in her speech, she changed up a lot of her wording. But every stump speech before was, I have this, I can do that. Brock is always talking, you, us, it's not just, the leadership is, he's going to lead, but he's not going to be an executive. He's going to be a leader and bring us with him. I mean, and actually, we're taking him with us.
Yeah, that is a significant difference in the language of the two of them. Both Barack Obama and John Edwards have been talking about how we, the people, need to be getting out there and getting active and be taking on the corporations and whatnot. And Hillary has been talking more. Senator Clinton has been talking more about how she has the ability, she has the experience, she has the connections. Interesting point and well taken. BJ, thanks a lot for the call. And it's going to be interesting to see how language changes through this process as time goes on. As I said, I'll keep saying, I think any of them would make a great president.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. And
welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. What happened yesterday, or for that matter, what's been happening the last week or so here as we've seen the Iowa and now the New Hampshire, the caucus and the primaries, and the consequence of these, your thoughts, I've shared some of mine. Frankly, I think we're going to see a whole lot more, we're going to see many more surprises as time goes on, to the extent that we can call these things surprises. These things change. Twists and turns. People are going to become more familiar with Barack Obama's positions. I thought Bill Clinton coming out yesterday and essentially attacking Barack Obama, and then the immediate fact-checking by CNN afterwards, at least that I saw, again, sitting in the airport, you know, watching the TV monitors, it looked like, you know, Clinton went after Barack Obama for saying something, and then CNN comes on and says, well, you know, you have to understand the context. That was 2002, and that was the, or was it 2004? Whatever it was, that was the convention. I guess it was the convention in 2004, and Clinton's taking this out of context. Bill Clinton's taking this out of context, and again, I'm not offering an opinion on that, at least at this moment, but the media, or at least CNN, what I was seeing, was essentially saying, not so much to worry about here, or maybe Bill Clinton is getting a little desperate or something like that. The media narratives are something that we need to keep our eye on as well. Terry in Beverly Hills, California. Hey, Terry, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi, Tom. I just want to say I agree with you that any of the Democratic candidates would make a good president. But this to-do about yesterday's primary, to me, that's not the surprise. I question the results of the caucus in Iowa. In Iowa, anyone can vote. You don't have to be a resident. You can register right at the door. Democrats, Republicans, Independents can vote for anyone.
Right,
and I think the big surprise was all these so-called Republicans. All these Republicans and a lot of the Independents voted for Barack. And I think, call it paranoia, if you will, But I was wondering how they were going to go after Hillary, and I think they tried for a knockout punch in Iowa, and I think they...
Who's the they you're talking of, Terry? Who is the they you're referring to, Terry?
The GOP, the Rovian wing.
So you think that the GOP is looking at Hillary Clinton and thinking that she would be harder to beat than Barack Obama or John Edwards?
Absolutely, and I think if this... is true that they try to knock her out. I think the delicious irony is that they started a force with Barack that they might not be able to stop.
Yeah.
You know, he had this big, they had these great expectations, and thousands of people, I understand, were lined up to see him and whatnot.
Sure.
But, and he came close to winning again.
Yeah, no, the guy, you know, it's like a rock star shows up, but, you know,
yeah.
Wherever he goes, there's no doubt about that. Here's another conspiracy theory for you, Terry, and I, you know, I appreciate your call. Thank you very much. And that is that, maybe a lot of that big turnout in Iowa for Barack Obama were students who basically had come in from out of state, and because it was an honor system, you could just show up at a caucus and say, hi, here I am. And I raised this yesterday with somebody who was there, and they said, no, these are your neighbors. You know these folks. Maybe. I mean, maybe not. There's that. The aha moment for me, and this is the tragedy of how things go in America, aha moment for me. Yesterday, I was at the CNN TV at the airport where I was, the Manchester, New Hampshire airport, where I sat for 3 hours waiting for a plane, was at the bar that was just, you know, about 100 feet down from the aisle. And you had to sit up at the bar in order to see the TV because it was there behind the bar. And so I'm sitting there with, you know, five, six guys. They were all men. They were five or six guys who were sitting there. And I turned to the guy to my left and I said, you know, who are you voting for? And this was a guy who... looked like he was probably in his late 50s, early 60s. I would describe him as somebody who looked like, you know, just kind of a typical blue-collar guy, you know. And he said, well, I sure ain't voting for that Barack Obama. And I said, why? And he said, well, you know, he's a Muslim. His daddy was a Muslim. He wouldn't put his hand on the Bible. He had to be sworn in on a Quran. And I said, oh, you got that email, huh? And he said, well, everybody knows that. I said, well, that email is wrong. That was Keith Ellison from Minnesota who wanted to be sworn in on the Quran. And it was Thomas Jefferson's Quran, by the way. And Barack Obama is not a Muslim. And he says, well, his middle name is Hussein. How much more do you need to know? And I'm looking around, and probably a third of the men who were sitting at the bar are nodding. You know, they're going, yeah, yeah. And I just, you know, it just blew my mind. Blew my mind. I mean, I don't frankly think that the thing that will be used against Barack Obama is his race. I think it's going to be his middle name in the dirty attacks that are going to come after him from the Republicans that are frankly already starting. I mean, it's just amazing. Phil in Florida. Hey, Phil, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi. You know, there's another big loser yesterday, and that was Matt Drudge.
How so?
He devoted his entire page to an unflattering picture of Hillary Clinton and special information from his special sources. It is as if Hillary people are going to call up Matt Drudge in Miami. In any event, he's saying that she was getting ready to drop out of the entire race.
Yeah. Right.
But here's the kicker. At about 9:30 this morning, after her election or her win in New Hampshire, he still had it there.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I don't know if someone paid him to do that.
Well, no, Matt Drudge has never made to the best of my knowledge, I mean, he used to do a radio show, too. I don't think he's ever made an attempt to say that he's some kind of neutral commentator or something. By the way, I should add, one of the folks in the chat room says, Tom, you know, Barack Obama is not a Muslim. AJ says that. And I should have made that point. I thought it was just, you know, obvious to everyone. Barack Obama is a Christian. He's not a Muslim. He did not attend a madrasa. He was sworn in on the Bible. I mean, my point is that this guy had that misinformation that I was talking about yesterday, that email that I am getting at least a half a dozen of those emails every single day. most of them from the right-wing circles that I'm on, but a few of them from progressives who are saying, oh, my God, I got this from my cousin, I got this from my dad, I got this from my uncle, I got this from my brother. But that was my point. So, anyhow, we'll see how it shakes out. Sue in the Bronx. Hey, Sue.
Yes, Tom. Everybody is talking about Hillary and her so-called crying.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that really, I don't think that was the turning point. It seems I kept waiting for somebody to pick it up, whether it be you people on Air America or television or something. Did anybody watch the debates? Obama, yeah. When Hillary made the nice comment about him.
Oh, and he said, you're nice enough, Hillary.
But look at him when he said that and how he said it.
I know. He looked a little nasty.
He looked. That's what I said. I said, he's going to lose. When I saw that, I'm a woman. Remember when Rick Lazio walked over and put his hand on her?
I don't. But...
Oh, well, that's what happened in New York when she ran for the Senate.
Uh-huh.
I'm not inferring that Obama is a sexist. That's not what I'm inferring. What I'm inferring...
Well, it came across rather condescending, actually.
Yes, he did, and it showed that he can't take the heat.
Yeah, interesting.
So that's what women saw.
Yeah,
and
I've
that's
seen,
why women went out and voted for Hillary.
Sue, I think that might have been a very significant factor.
To
thank
me,
you.
I called my sister at 5 o'clock yesterday afternoon because I kept waiting for somebody to discuss that on the news or television or radio or whatever. Nobody ever mentioned it. I called my sister last night in Arkansas, and I told her. I said, she's going to either win or come damn close because women in New Hampshire watched that debate, and they saw that the man can't take the heat.
Interesting. Interesting.
And who can take heat?
Yeah.
And I'm not a Hillary supporter. I was not a Hillary supporter. I was a Kucinich supporter.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
not
we.
Like this. I'm a Hillary. Who?
No, I don't think any of us here are trying to be partisans.
I wasn't just
observing what's going
but
on.
I observed it, and when I saw that, I said, "Uh-oh."
Yeah.
Women of New Hampshire saw.
Whoop! Sue. I'm sorry. Somebody popped a window up at me from the chat room, and it just blew you off the air. You're absolutely right. In my opinion, that a number of women saw that and said, hey, wait a minute, enough. Annie in Salem, Oregon. Hey, Annie, we got about a minute before the break. What's up? Annie? Yeah, you're on the air.
Oh, I just wanted to say, I think that I'm not a Hillary supporter. First off, I'm for John Edwards. But if I can't have John Edwards, I'll have Hillary. But I'm a 67-year-old woman. And I know how much difference there is between the way women get treated. And I'd even like to say on THC, you guys think nothing of interrupting Heidi. She does never interrupt you.
Oh, you're talking about our morning show.
Yes, and I think for sure Hillary's got the scars. She's got the tough places. They won't be able to hurt her. Barack Obama has not paid his dues. He's going to be their meat. I bet you that first caller you had this segment is right. They'd like to have Barack Obama because he's thin-skinned and chicken-hearted when it comes to stuff like that. Women have had to put up with so much. When I was in college, people would say to me, Mrs. G, you wish you were a man. No way. I never wish I was a man. But that's the way they thought because I would fight hard and stick up for myself.
Yep. Well, good on you for sticking up on yourself, Annie, and thanks a lot for calling in. And your point is well made. The bias, as I've said many times on this program, don't ever underestimate sexism and misogyny in the United States, or racism for that matter. 45 minutes past the hour.
Tom Hartman. Speaking the truth that multinational corporations don't want you to know. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Nothing on but the radio. Feel the music playing soft and slow.
Welcome back. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Diane in San Diego, California. Hey, Diane, welcome to the program.
Hi. I'm calling because, number one, I want to let you guys know I've been on this computer for the last 4 hours. We don't get you on radio anymore.
Yeah, I know the San Diego station.
San Diego.
Went sports.
But you're worth waiting for because I have been listening to you guys a long time. And I'm for Edwards. Mm-hmm. I'm 57. I've been listening to and reading about all the candidates on my computer, and I find him very sincere. It's not that I don't like the other ones, but I like him the best,
well,
including his wife.
Yeah, yeah, I've met Elizabeth.
I think Elizabeth, you know, is a very strong woman. Everything that I've seen about her, and I've taken care of cancer patients, she has an inner strength and support that very much complements John Edwards.
Yeah. Well said, Diane. Thank you very much for the call, and I agree with you. I've met Louise, and I've met Elizabeth Edwards and spent some time with her, and she's an extraordinary woman. James in Los Angeles here on the air.
Are you talking about Robert in Los Angeles?
Oh, is that Robert? I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. Hey, Tom, very, very quickly, I hope I'm not too far out of my conspiracy theory. I pray it's not right. But my understanding is that the Diebold machines that were used in New Hampshire yesterday were the same ones that were featured in the documentary on HBO, Stealing Democracy, where they demonstrated, especially in the last 10 minutes, where a technician or a computer guy from Caltech with a little smart chip determined what the results would be on their little fake test that they did.
Yeah, they're pretty hackable. And the New York Times did a piece kind of scratching the surface. They didn't really get into what I think are the really serious issues, but at least they did it, their cover story. But here's the problem, Robert, is that the exit polls, or the entrance polls, rather, were not all that different, and the exit polls were not all that different from the machine output. I mean, when you look at the 2000 election and the 2004 election, there's a handful of states. There's 6-8 states, as I recall, where there was a real significant what's called red shift, where the polls, particularly in 2000, by 2004, the pollsters were just totally in disarray because their polls started going crazy in 2000. But in 2000 and 2004, but particularly in 2000, there was this handful of states where the polls, just in those states, the polls were off 5, 6, 7, 8% saying that Al Gore would have won when, in fact, George Bush got the most votes on the machine, or in 2004 saying that John Kerry would have won when, in fact, George Bush got the votes on the machine. It was referred to as the red shift. I don't think that there was a significant anything shift in New Hampshire.
Yesterday, they said they had Barack up by 12 percentage points. And everybody that I've been hearing all day, today and yesterday, all the experts, CNN and MSNBC, how could this be that they were so far off when the experts...
Well, that's the polls versus what happened, but unless I'm misreading these news stories, which is entirely possible. I've just been up here for an hour and a half or so, and I'm running on fumes, but my take of it is that the exit polls and the entrance polls are not all that different from the result, that the polls that were taken a day before are significantly different.
No, that's not my understanding. Barack was 12 percentage points ahead. And then the other thing about this machine is it may be a rumor or whatever, but the machine has the capability of going 12% either way. So if that is indeed the fact, and if it is indeed the same machine that they featured in the HBO documentary, where all you do is you just change the little smart chip that goes into the thing, I just find it totally bogus, and I feel that the puppet masters are just controlling this whole election process because they're trying to make it really exciting so that the people that they want to be elected will be elected, but because there was ups and downs in our candidate and that candidate, that we will feel that we've participated, and therefore there is no reason to check further with the...
This is, Robert, whether it's true or not, the appearance of, it's like Caesar's wife, the appearance of it has to be done away with. I absolutely agree with you, and the last thing that we should be privatizing, the last thing we should privatize in America is our vote. It is insane that private for-profit corporations count and tally our votes in secret. It's wrong. It's just plain old flat-out wrong. Whether or not it had an effect in New Hampshire, I frankly have no idea. But it's wrong that it's even there. Rich in Massachusetts. Hey, Rich.
Yeah, Tom. This is Rich from Massachusetts. First off, I want to say that I agree with Susan. You really...
Oh, Rich, we lost you. Let's go to Isabel in South Carolina. Hey, Isabel.
Hey, I'm, I guess, a second-time caller now, but I just wanted to say to you guys, from experience of having government assistance in Medicaid, it's not the best policy or plan for anyone. I'm going to throw Katrina in there. I was in New Orleans during that time, and because of the fact that we had to move, we didn't have a job yet, and we had just gotten a place, So we couldn't really afford to have my baby. At the time, I was 5 months pregnant, and I needed to have government assistance. Well, the 3.5-hour wait time every time I went into the office was ridiculous. The staff was always overworked, obviously underpaid, and these are all people who work for government assistance. And I just don't see any candidate out there who...
Here's the problem with Medicaid and Medicare, Isabel, and that is that it's not, because it's not universal, you don't have all of the American people out there saying, hey, wait a minute, this doesn't work. I'm not going to reelect you until you make this work. There's not a large enough constituency.
Yeah, well, I just want to be the voice of reason out there for people who think that, you know, having medical assistance through the government as a free ride would be a good thing. I think it would be a disservice to our nation and to medical doctors. And
let me tell you about calling my health insurance company and trying to get a doctor's appointment and being told, okay, you know, a month and a half down the road, and then when I go in, I get a bill in the mail, and if you don't pay this bill within 30 days, if you don't let us know that this bill is, and if you don't make the phone call, and if you don't fill out the papers, then you end up with another bill, and it shouldn't have been there in the first place. I mean, Isabel, we could swap horror stories all day long. I'll tell you what. Your solution, my solution, whatever it may be, this system is totally screwed up. And I think that there's an absolute broad consensus about that, at the very least, on the Democratic side. The Republicans all love it the way it is. 57 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman, defending America from the weapons of mass deception. The Tom Hartman Program. Now, speaking from behind the good old working class stainless steel microphone, Tom Hartman.
And today the good old working class stainless steel microphone is at Talk 1090 in Seattle. Doing our show live from here. We were able to catch a flight out of Chicago last night at, I frankly don't remember what time it was. It was late. And the plane to Seattle had been delayed by 3 hours. Which is the only reason I was able to get it. But everything going out of Chicago yesterday, what a mess. So again, tip of the hat and many, many thanks to Tall Paul and all our friends here at Talk 1090 in Seattle. It is great to be here. And you know, a lot going on around the world, a lot going on in the news, but the big news right now is the primary and what happened with the primary. Your thoughts on it, my thoughts on it. I think there's a variety of perspectives that can be taken on this. A lot of it has to do with what's coming down the road. And I'm really curious, and I'm going to be looking for this, where are the Republican strategists are at? Because what I've been hearing, I mean, we've had several of them on the program over the last year, and they have been pretty aggressively pushing a Hillary Clinton presidential nomination because they thought that she would be beatable. Although they have such a mess over on the Republican side, I've been predicting for some time that I think John McCain is going to be the Republican nominee and that he'll be, frankly, tough to beat. But I may be wrong. I'm very often am when it comes to these kind of predictions. But we'll see. He certainly did well in 2000, and if it hadn't been for the same company that has been hired by Mitt Romney in South Carolina doing the push polls against John McCain, calling up registered Republican voters and saying, hey, did you know that he has an out-of-wedlock African-American child? When, in fact, he and his wife had adopted a child from Bangladesh, so she has rather dark skin. But, again, playing the race card with a lie in this case. Took down John McCain in South Carolina back 8 years ago. And to what extent is the race card going to be played against Barack Obama in this race and this time? And the gender card against Hillary Clinton. Carl Bernstein, I believe, is on the line with us. Great. Okay, Carl Bernstein is on the line with us. And, Carl, welcome to the program.
Good to be here.
CarlBernstein.com, the website. Carl is, of course, the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author of A Woman in Charge, The Life of Hillary Rodham Clinton, arguably one of the definitive books, perhaps the definitive book on Hillary Rodham Clinton. Although, as I recall, when the book first came out, and it's about to come out now in paperback as well, right?
It came out in paperback yesterday with a new afterword.
Great, great. So,
everybody should rush right out.
Well, you know, when books come out in paperback, it's a great time to pick them up because, you know, you get the same book for a lower price.
This is true.
So when I remember when it first came out in hardcover that there was some consternation from the Clinton camp about your book.
Well, I don't think it was consternation. They responded without having a copy of the book to a story in the Washington Post that gave a lot of the headlines by saying, oh, there's nothing new here, because they're afraid of it. They've since quieted down. At the same time, you know, the Clinton people are notoriously uncomfortable with the idea of being looked at by serious biographers and journalists. They like to control the way they're perceived.
Yeah, and in a way it's almost like they're uncomfortable being looked at as human beings, and yet one of the media narratives that's running around right now is that the reason why Hillary Clinton beat the polls yesterday at the last minute, apparently, was because she allowed herself to show her human side.
That's a little too complicated for me.
Yeah, what do you think happened?
I think, first of all, that polls are only a snapshot. And that the polls were behind what was going on. And what was going on was that, yes, she took over her own campaign. She knew that she was in terrible trouble. And when she is in terrible trouble throughout her life, she's followed her own instincts. And her own instincts were to let a bit of herself show, to present herself a certain way, to appear to be more accessible, and also to get away from this idea that her campaign was about restoration to the White House of the Clintons plural.
Right.
And also, I think the most important thing that happened, really, in many ways, was in the debate. She said that I'm a woman running for president of the United States. You know, and until now, she hasn't really said that. And
what?
I think that, you know, that bringing a woman's sensibility to the presidency, given the way the last few occupants of the White House, male occupants, have looked at it, might have a certain appeal.
I think it appeals to many people, the idea of a woman. On the other hand, you look at Maggie Thatcher, and you know, maybe it's not that big a deal. I think, frankly, it is, but there have been some women leaders who are...
Well, you're looking at it ideologically. I think that there are other considerations besides ideology. I think the most important thing right now is that everything is being perceived and moving so fast in terms of body language and this sentence and that sentence,
mm-hmm.
That we need to understand who Hillary Clinton particularly is, what the story of her life is, and the same with Barack Obama. And we need to look at their campaigns in terms of how they're being run, the apparatus, what the principles are involved in the way their campaigns are being conducted, but particularly in terms of who these individuals are.
Yeah. And I would say I would add John Edwards into that, too. I still think we have a three-way race here.
Well, I don't think so. I think that I must say I'd be very surprised if Edwards is competitive enough to win many of these states, and I think that basically his candidacy hurts Obama's, that they draw from the same pool of voters largely.
Yeah.
And
they're splitting the anti-Hillary vote, as it were, or the...
Yeah, the anti-Hillary vote, and could you hold 1 second? I know I hate dead air.
Yeah, no, that's quite right. We're talking with Carl Bernstein. CarlBernstein.com is his website. So if it's fine, Carl, just give me a chance to
That's
plug
okay.
your book.
Go ahead.
His new book is just out in paperback, A Woman in Charge, The Life of Hillary Rodham Clinton. Carl, yesterday Bill Clinton came out and just guns blazing at Barack Obama. It was almost immediately debunked to the extent that things get debunked by CNN. What's your take on his
We're talking about debunking. I think what you're talking about is Donna Brazile came on and on the air on CNN and said that this has gone beyond mere campaigning. And I think that what Bill Clinton said was petulant. There's been a lot of petulance from Bill Clinton in this campaign, and he's also said more things than ought to be said that misrepresent the facts, including what he said about Obama in 2004 and what he was explaining about the war. If you read the full quote,
you're taking it out of context.
Of Obama's, it was taken totally out of context. Clinton has done an awful lot of that in this campaign.
To what extent do you think he's doing that? Because that's just Bill Clinton versus he's doing. They're playing good cop, bad cop here, and it's in.
That's much too Machiavellian, even for the people that we're speaking of, or for professional politicians. I think what's happened is that Hillary Clinton said something that everybody looked over in Iowa the other night. She said, "I'm running this campaign, meaning from now on." And she and some of the people around her have perceived that Bill Clinton can be a plus or he can be baggage. And it's a very fine line in this campaign because she's the one running for president. And I think that was indicative of him being baggage.
Yeah. Is she going to put a sock in his mouth?
Pardon me?
Is she going to put a sock in his mouth? Is she going to back him off?
That's too simple. There's also a dynamic between the two of them that very much is in play, and there's a tension in that dynamic. And, he wants to do everything he can to get her elected, and he thinks sometimes he knows better, and she thinks sometimes she knows better. But it's back to this delicate question of restoration, of two Clintons going to the White House,
right. And
how that is going to play out.
And ultimately, when we try to boil it down to sound bites, we do a disservice to all of us. So people should read your book, A Woman in Charge, The Life of Hillary Rodham Clinton, now out in paperback from Carl Bernstein, carlbernstein.com, the website. Carl, thanks so much for dropping by.
There's some excerpts up there on the website, and I hope people will take a look at them.
Great.
As well as a piece I wrote about John McCain a while back.
Great. CarlBernstein.com. 16 minutes past the hour.
There's no sense in dancing around the subject. A wound gets worse when it's treated with neglect. Well, don't turn now. There's nothing here to fear. You can talk to me.
And there's some serious issues out there, too. For example, the Supreme Court is going to be hearing arguments about whether Indiana's voter ID law breaks the law. This is a law that would make it illegal, for example, for my mother to vote because she hasn't had a driver's license in 30 or 40 years and doesn't have photo ID. It would disenfranchise a lot of people who don't have driver's licenses, don't use public transportation, mostly the poor. Or the elderly, but and mostly people who will vote Democratic. I mean, that's the bottom line for it, right? I mean, that's what it's all about. And so we'll see, how this is going on. Senator Larry Craig, of course, is trying to get his conviction pulled back out. It'd be a bad choice of phrasing. Anyhow, is he back out of the restroom? I'm not sure. Whatever it is. Anyway, Larry Craig trying to get himself unconvicted. Let's leave it at that. 1-866-303-2270. And George Bush heading to the Middle East. And we've got this Iranian boat coming up against the U.S. fleet there. And the U.S. fleet, some would argue the U.S. fleet being there is a provocative presence. We still don't know, at least I haven't seen any reports. Perhaps you know of something. What brought this about? Was this some sort of official Iranian policy to provoke this? Was this a wild card? Was this perhaps somebody who wasn't even Iranian who was running this boat? Are we trying to provoke a Gulf of Tonkin incident, or is Iran, for that matter? I don't think that that's stupid, but, who knows? I mean, it certainly would play into the hands of the Republicans to a certain extent, to the extent that they want us to continually be afraid and to think of the world as a terrifying place and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll see. Steve in Indiana. Hey, welcome to the program, Steve. What's on your mind?
Well, you know, I'll bet ever since Obama won Iowa, you know, all the cable channels give him anywhere from a 9 to a 12 point spread, you know, going into New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was just curious because, you know, all the cable channels is just, you know, really pushing for Obama. Now, why in the world would they want to push him so, you know, to get him to be our candidate? But down here, you know, in southern Indiana, just a rock throw from Kentucky, several people that I talked to, sadly to say, they just flat come out and tell you they'll vote for anybody before they'll vote for a black man. I mean, it's sad, but, you know, is it possible?
There's that, and there's his middle name is Hussein. As I told you, this guy sitting next to me in the bar in the airport last night, you know, he's a Muslim, you know, and everybody around him is nodding. I mean, you know, it's like, so there's some liabilities there. On the other hand, you've got as much as half of the electorate, according to some polls, who would vote for anybody other than Hillary Clinton, and not because she's a woman, but because she is who she is.
Oh, yeah, I understand what you're saying, but it just seems so strange that why they wanting to give, you know, Obama basically a free pass at this point and just really going after Hillary for all they can go with.
Yeah,
because they don't want her.
I'm not so sure that it's the media is promoting anybody as much as the media. There are a couple of messages, Ron Paul's message, Dennis Kucinich's message, and John Edwards' message, that the media just doesn't, the corporate media, just doesn't want out there. They don't want anybody talking about corporate control of America. They don't want anybody talking about the disenfranchisement, essentially, the fact that we don't have access to good information, you know, that kind of thing. So, whether they're promoting a candidate or not, I'm skeptical. Joe in Cleveland, Ohio. Hey, Joe.
Hello, Tom. I want to make a comment about this election result. You haven't had a chance to really go through any of these numbers. I'm going to send you a couple of links, but there is a distinct difference. If you go to blackboxvoting.org, there was a hearings that were held in New Hampshire, and there's what's called a chain of custody research that she's doing throughout the country in all the precincts, all the counties.
Yeah, Bev Harris.
Right, and it was determined that 81% of the voting population in New Hampshire was on the D-vote machines, and even though 45% were hand-counted. But I'm going to send you also a Brad blog article that goes through and links up to different polling places. And just real quick, this was way beyond the margin of error, okay? Hillary Clinton, the difference between what she got in the machines and what she got in the hand counting was the poll data showed her at 30%. On the she was able to receive 39% of the vote, almost 40% of the vote on the machines, and 35% otherwise. But there's a significant portion.
But that may reflect that, you know, the machines were in the big cities. The ballots, the paper ballots were out in the small towns.
There's another group, and that is the unknown. They don't know how they were counted. She had a 45% level there to Obama's 30. She's the only one that had a huge spike upward. Everybody else had one downward.
Well, Joe, you'll never hear me defending voting machines.
I'll send you the link. You need to see the numbers.
Okay, I appreciate it, Joe. Thanks a lot. 27 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Oh, yeah. We're having interesting times. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Let's just hear a few clips from the three leading Democratic candidates last night after the vote came in. Let's go to Barack Obama first here.
Something happening when people vote not just for party that they belong to, but the hopes that they hold in common. And whether we are rich or poor, black or white, Latino or Asian, whether we hail from Iowa or New Hampshire, Nevada or South Carolina, we are ready to take this country in a fundamentally new direction. That's what's happening in America right now. Change is what's happening in America.
I'd say you can detect a theme there. It's a theme that's been fairly consistent throughout the campaign, and that is change. And, in fact, we're hearing the same thing over on the Republican side. Basically, everybody is saying 26 years of Reaganism and crazy economic and trade policies ain't working. Ain't working. Goldman Sachs just came out and said the country's going into a recession. I'll give you some more details on that in just a second. Here is Hillary Clinton's response last night to the polling.
This campaign will transform America because we will take on the challenges. We will seize the opportunities. Every single day, I am not going out there on my own. I'm going out there accompanied by millions and millions of people who believe, as I do, that this country is worth fighting for. Thank you, and God bless you.
There we go, Hillary Clinton. And I believe, do we have John Edwards' audio, Chris? Okay, in just a second, Chris is gonna play some John Edwards. I'm not in my normal studio here, so we're doing all this stuff out of New York, and Chris Rosen doing a marvelous job of we're all kind of punting here, and again, a tip of the hat to the folks here at Talk 1090 in Seattle for providing us with the studio. Okay, here's John Edwards.
So up until now, about half of 1% of Americans have voted. 99% plus have not voted. And those 99% deserve to have their voices heard, because we have had too much in America of people's voices not being heard. I have met too many Americans whose voices have not been heard in this democracy.
Yeah, indeed. And well said. 1-866-303-2270, your telephone number. Joe in Chicago. Hey, Joe, what are your thoughts?
Hey, Tom, you mentioned the Iran incident a few weeks ago.
Yeah, Iran actually has now come out and said that this whole thing has been fabricated, that it's a provocation, which is interesting.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, that is interesting, because I thought I saw a videotape of it yesterday.
No, I mean, they're not denying that it happened, and the details of how it could have been fabricated as a provocation or whatever, I have not been able to find. I'm poking around here. Got a page on The Guardian, but I can't get the thing to load on my computer. But apparently they have just very recently come out and said, no, we are not trying to provoke an incident with you guys, and the extent to which you are hyping this thing is U.S. hype, not Iranian hype.
But, oh, well, that I definitely agree with. The first thing I thought when I heard it was, what are the U.S. ships doing out there in the first place? But
yeah,
a couple clips.
Two complete battle carrier groups.
Right, right. But just after a couple of clicks on the internet, I read that 25% of the world's crude oil goes through that strait.
Yep.
And then I looked on Bloomberg.com, and Tony Capaccio wrote an article, and basically, well, I'm going to quote, he just said, a strike against Iran's nuclear program would probably be met with an effort to choke off oil shipments to the Strait of Hormuz.
That's right.
So, I mean, all the talk about, you know, that we're not planning any military strikes. Yeah, you know, you got to believe George Bush when he says World War III. That's all I really wanted to say.
Yeah, well, thank you, Joe. And consider the consequences of that. If you had that provocation, and if Iran did succeed in shutting down even a significant portion of the oil coming through the Straits of Hormuz, then the price of oil goes to $200 a barrel. And who benefits? Dick Cheney and all his buddies. They all get incredibly rich. And, you know, I mean, there's a reason why Halliburton is moving their corporate headquarters to Dubai. Right, there's a reason why Dick Cheney's sitting on all those thousands, hundreds of thousands of Halliburton stock options that have doubled, more than doubled in value since he became president, and all their buddies in the war industry and in the oil industry are it's a fine thing. We like this Bush presidency. Yeah, Pat in San Francisco. Hey, Pat, what's up?
Well, hi, Tom. I really enjoy your show. Basically, I want to talk about Hillary. I too was very surprised that she won. I'm actually a Hillary supporter, and I just feel the press has been giving her a really bad shake the last month or so since Obama became popular. And I just feel like Obama, you know, he frankly scares me as a candidate and a president because he lacks foreign policy experience, and he also doesn't really have the foreign policy ties that Hillary and Bill do. I truly think the world, as you just spoke about with Iran, is in a really, really bad situation in terms of Pakistan with the instability of their government having a nuclear weapon and what's going on in Iraq. I just feel like Hillary and Bill are really the two people that who have the connections and ties that could make you know, make a difference in that area in a more in a long-term way. So I just feel that, you know, that she's a good candidate for that reason. I also feel like she can get things done in the House and Senate, whereas Obama would be, you know, he hasn't done very much since he's been, you know, in, I think he's a senator, isn't he? Or,
yeah, he's been in the United States Senate for his second year now, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, I think she knows how the system works.
Although he spent a lot of time in the Illinois Senate, you know, he was a member of Congress, of the Illinois Congress, and so he's not, you know, unaware of how politics works and things like that. Although, as David Bonnier pointed out yesterday, when he was putting together a health care program for Illinois, they started out with the goal of it being a national or a universal program. And Senator Barack Obama brought in the health insurance lobbyists, and all of a sudden it no longer became, we're going to insure everybody in the state of Illinois, but we're going to have the goal of insuring everybody in the state of Illinois. And, you know, it's just, you can't play nice with these guys. And I think at a certain level, Barack Obama, and for that matter, Hillary Clinton, saying that they can, you know, they're going to bring all these people to the table and negotiate with them, I don't think it's going to happen.
Well, I mean, you know, I think there's more of a chance of it happening with Hillary and Bill than it is with Obama. I mean, I think they have a lot of goodwill in other countries. They've, you know, for the 8 years that, you know, he was president and she was first lady, there is a lot of goodwill towards Bill Clinton. I just feel that that's an untapped resource.
Yeah,
that,
especially,
you know,
internationally.
Yeah. I also just want to say a word about Edwards, because he was my favorite, you know, during the Kerry years. I wanted him to be the president and run. And when he became the VP on the Kerry ticket, I thought that was, I wasn't fond of Kerry, but I felt like Edwards had the personality and everything. And actually, he let me down, because I feel like they couldn't get past the Republican attack dog machine. And, you know, I feel like they should have maybe had been more aggressively pursuing news outlets to talk about the swift boats and all kinds of issues.
Decisions that were not made by John Edwards. John Edwards, believe me, if
I was on a ticket to be a VP and this was happening, I would be out there in news. I don't care what.
No, but you can't do it. You can't do it. I mean, if you're the VP and you go out and you start making your own news without the permission of the guy who's the top of the ticket.
Yeah,
that's just not done.
Yeah, I just feel that he didn't aggressively go for it enough. And I feel like Bill and Hillary have been, they have been investigated endlessly. There, you know, there's nothing left that the Republicans can
prize. I agree, and I would say the same is also true of John Edwards. But I'm not trying to, you know, promote Edwards or you, Hillary, here. I think that we all need to be looking at all of these candidates and particularly their positions on the issues and making intelligent decisions. But, Pat, I've got to move along. Thank you for the call, though, and for your thoughtful perspective. Debbie in New York City. Hey, Debbie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call, Tom. I wanted to speak about Mr. Bernstein's comment, which is exactly what I thought last night when I was watching the results. He said that Edwards is taking away votes from Obama, and I am an Edwards.
Or vice versa.
Right, correct, absolutely. And just so you know, I am an Edwards supporter, absolutely. And quite honestly, Obama would be my second choice. Basically, I don't want Clinton, and it's based on her voting record while she has been in the Senate. But I won't get into specifics there. What I wanted to ask is, what are your thoughts about a combination ticket of Obama and Edwards? And at what point do they make that decision? Is it too late after Super Tuesday? Because I guess my worry is I don't want Clinton to be the nomination, and I don't want her to get it by default because of these two splitting votes.
Yeah, well, that's the tough one. Is, as right now, Obama is significantly ahead of Edwards, and so he'd be crazy. I mean, it just ain't going to happen that he would say to Edwards, "I'll be your vice president." And Edwards at the and frankly, I think the most electable ticket would be Edwards at the top of the ticket and Obama as vice president. You'd have them as president, vice president for 8 years, and then Obama would be in his 50s going into the second term and in a perfect position, you know, now tested, experienced, national, you know, all those things that they're going to use to attack him right now, he would have, and he would be the president for the following 8 years. And you could have a good, solid 16-year term that could really transform this country. But Obama being that far out ahead right now is not going to say yes to Edwards, and Edwards is not going to take the number two position again. He's in this for president or for nothing. So, and maybe that's just, you know, a couple of dueling egos. I don't know, but I think you're right, Debbie.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. News without conflicts of global corporate interest. The Tom Hartman Program.
Hypocrisy, save us from the lies. Save our homes from foreclosing, stop treating us as spies. Save our jobs from leaving, bring back made in USA. Represent the ones who make you, not the ones who pave your way.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Our program brought to you in part by the 200,000 working men and women of SEIU 1199. Arguing, fighting for health care as a right, not a privilege, here in the United States of America. Ellen Ranner on the line with us from the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. The great folks who brought us the Radio Row that we were broadcasting from yesterday and the day before. And Ellen, first of all, just thanks so much for all of your help and all the great people that you have working with, Candy Stroud, LaVisa, what a staff.
Well, thank you so much, and I'm sure they'll be glad to hear about it. You escaped it. I didn't get to say goodbye, so I was sad about that. I'm still actually in New Hampshire. I wanted to wait till I did your show, and now I'm going to leave. But, first of all, it's very much like a ghost town. All of our staff went to different events last night. I personally went to Giuliani and Edwards, and Giuliani said that he did his event early, said he was leaving for Florida, would congratulate the winner, and was going to go to Florida, where, of course, he hoped to have strength, and that he was going to unveil a whole new tax plan today. So that is what Giuliani is doing today. Edwards is, I have a couple friends that have been on the Edwards bus, and they say that he is just not going to give up. I think because of Edwards' strength in the South, he is hoping to win South Carolina. He definitely doesn't drop out till then. And Obama just sent around an email, literally 10 minutes ago, saying that, you know, they closed a gap. And as far as they're concerned, they did extremely well. They closed a 16-point gap to within 2 points, that they were then asking everybody to contribute anywhere between 25 and 100 bucks or something like that. And the fact is that, as we know, Obama still can tap into people that Hillary Clinton may have maxed out with.
Right, because she got the what is it, $2,300, I think, you can give as a maximum to each candidate?
Yes. Well, it's $2,300 for each for the primary, and then for the general, and then I guess $300 of that is for administrative. It's complicated as to how that actually gets divvied up.
Right, but early on, she went to a lot of donors, and they simply wrote the check for the maximum amount. And early on, in the case of John Edwards and Barack Obama, who were doing much of their fundraising on the internet, it was people like me sending in a check for, you know, hitting PayPal for $100 or something like that.
Right, exactly. So I think that in terms of that campaign, that's happening. A lot of the New Hampshire people, of course, still said that Hillary Clinton had the best organization, that she had hired the governor's people, and she really had very, very good organization here in the state. And then a lot of the independents went over to McCain and actually did not vote for Obama, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah. So do you think that the reason why Obama didn't beat Hillary Clinton on the Democratic side, and the reason why John McCain did so well on the Republican side, is the Republican swing vote, or the Democratic swing, or the independent swing vote, pardon me, running on 3 hours sleep here. I'm broadcasting from Seattle, by the way.
Oh my gosh.
I missed two planes last night and ended up here at 2 o'clock in the morning. Is because of the independents showing up and voting for John McCain, and really might not actually reflect the will of the base anyway, of either the Republican or the Democratic parties?
Well, I think it's hard, you know, the final analysis has not been in. And, of course, the exit polling and some of the other polling before is not necessarily truthful. So I think it's going to be a hard hit in terms of what that analysis is. Now, a lot of people are saying the Democratic Party just issued something a few minutes ago saying, well, you know, they had all these voters that voted with the Democrats, which means that Sununu, Senator Sununu, is in trouble. I think beauty's in the eye of the beholder on where those swing voters went, and it's impossible to tell, but a lot of people are saying they went Republican. However, the Democratic Party is saying, well, they went Democratic. I don't see that.
Yeah. Well, I think as a separate issue, Senator John Sununu, the Republican who is up for reelection this year, he's in trouble because 6 years ago when he got elected against Gene Shaheen, the very, very popular Democratic governor of the state of New Hampshire, by just a few hundred votes, as I recall, or maybe a few thousand votes, a very, very tight race, he got elected as a result in part of fraud for which people went to jail. I mean, crimes were committed to get this guy into the Senate, this Republican into the Senate. And the people in New Hampshire know that.
Phone jamming stuff. Absolutely.
Yeah, the phone jamming stuff. And perhaps more. But that's the stuff that we know because there was an actual conviction. A guy went to jail, and he's now written a book about it. He's going to be on this program later this week, I believe, talking about it, you know, Confessions of a Republican Operative and How to Steal an Election. And so John Sununu is in trouble, not just because he's a Republican, but because he's viewed by many in New Hampshire as dirty, you know, corrupt.
Right. He's tainted by the scandal.
Yeah, exactly.
Ellen, and now, of course, South Carolina is just going to be absolutely huge. I know I'm the one that's supposed to be reporting and whatever, but I am going to ask you, what's your prediction there?
I don't have one. I'm giving up the prediction business, Ellen. I'm just amazed by it all. I mean, there are so many twists and turns and permutations. The thing that disappoints me the most is how the media just comes up with a narrative for each character. It's like everybody is a person in a play, and they just stick with these narratives, and there's not much discussion of the issues.
We did a little wager, which you're not allowed to wager on radio, but we weren't on radio, with all of our hosts. Now, some people got... one person actually got it. Was Radio Syndication One that got the numbers correctly, but not the person. They got Obama and how much he actually pulled correctly. Mm-hmm. But what is interesting is not one host in the room, and there were like 35 of them here, mm-hmm. got the fact that Hillary would win this correctly.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting. Well, everybody was predicting it was going to be an Obama blowout. So.
Right, and everybody bought into it.
Yeah. Ellen Radner. There you go. I'm sorry I missed you at the end of the day, Ellen. I had to run out and try and catch what I thought was going to be an on-time plane. But thanks again so much.
Well,
we
loved having
time.
You. We'll see you soon.
Indeed. It was great being there. Ellen Radner, talkradionews.com, the Talk Radio News Service. 57 minutes past the hour.
Uncommon sense from the radical middle. This is the Tom Hartman Program. The Tom Hartman Program. Welcome to the vast radical middle conspiracy. Accept no imitations. Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Sometimes you know what you know, sometimes you don't know what you don't know, sometimes even everything you know is wrong.
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync and think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Could it be? Well, maybe, maybe not. How to Raise a Future Millionaire. Troy Dunn is the author of Young Bucks, the subtitle How to Raise a Future Millionaire, troydunn.com, the website. Troy, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you with us. To what extent, Troy, you describe yourself as a self-made millionaire. You're the father of seven. Even your eight-year-old is running a business. Isn't this a little... I mean, what about citizenship? What about childhood? What about
Well, first of all, I have seven children, and six of the seven have a small. Each of them have a small business. The only one that doesn't right now is the three-year-old. She's a bit of a slacker, but we're working on her.
I see. Okay.
Actually, what's happening is children are having the same childhood as a child that doesn't have their own business. They just have a lot less money when they enjoy it. But my kids don't work very much. What they're doing, other kids do to, you know, earn money for Girl Scouts. My kids will do that, and then they'll turn around and sell something to earn money for themselves as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, our job as parents is to give our children life skills. And yet we seem to think that the only skills they really should have is, you know, ballet and soccer.
Or reading, writing, and arithmetic. It always boggles my mind that people graduate from high school not knowing how to change a diaper, not knowing how to balance a checkbook, and not knowing how to negotiate a mortgage or credit card.
You're so right. And we say that everybody agrees on that, and yet we're not fixing it. And I don't know which of us is holding the key to the secret vault where we can change that. But we don't have to accept it. We can say, hey, you know, in my household, that's not how it's going to be. And I'll tell you, Tom, in my household, we don't pay an allowance. I think that's one of the greatest mistakes parents make because, and you talk about citizenship and all that. We believe in our household that the family works together to take care of one another, period. We don't tip mom when she makes dinner, and we're not going to pay you to make your bed and clean your room. That's what we do. We share the house.
Yeah, what you're describing is what Ronald Reagan would have called socialism, which is we the people collectively taking care of ourselves. It's community at the level of family.
Right. That's exactly. Listen, I'm convinced, and you hopefully will agree with me, most of the world's problems could be fixed in the core nucleus of the home outward. Yeah. And if you run into somebody that's got serious life issues, you can almost usually trace it back to their home life and their family.
And if we viewed our governments and if we viewed our nations more as, hey, we're all in this together.
A big family.
Yeah, a big family. Because we ultimately are all just people here.
You know, I sit and watch all these political debates going on and these caucuses and primaries, and you know, I'm a pretty old-fashioned conservative, but I have to be honest with you. There's things that both Obama and Hillary have said that make the hair on my neck stand up in joy. I'm like, wow, that is fantastic. And I love that. And I'm so not sure where I'm going to vote at this point. I just know it's not going to be for Hickaby.
Yeah.
But other than him, I'm totally wide open to this. I was a Reagan guy that voted for Bill Clinton. But because I do think of it like you just said, it's a big family to me.
Yeah, rather than debating politics with you for this short segment, which we certainly could do. But I don't think it's going to be productive. I think that there's some really important points here that you're making, and that is that there's a variety of life skills that we're not teaching our kids. And as I said, I think, you know, parenting is a life skill that we're not teaching our kids. The whole area of sex ed, and, you know, most people are not going to go out and kill somebody in their lifetime, although you can watch on television any given day, you know, learn 30 different ways to kill people. Most people eventually have a sexual partner and a mate. We don't talk about love. We talk about, you know, our media doesn't talk about love and relationships. They talk about dysfunctional relationships and lust. And frankly, how to earn a living, and not just how to earn a living, but how to build a business, how to make a living.
Exactly.
And so what are the tools that you're teaching your kids and that you're recommending in your book? We're talking with Troy Dunn, your book, Young Bucks, for children to learn so that they can carry these into later life and become entrepreneurs in an age where it's becoming increasingly difficult to be an entrepreneur as a result of all this corporate consolidation.
Yeah. Well, first of all, Young Bucks is targeted directly at the parents. This is a parenting book to help them learn to raise future millionaires. And I don't mean millionaires in some callous, shallow way. I could have actually called it what I wanted to call it, but it was a debate at the publisher. I wanted to call it How to Raise a Future Philanthropist because I believe every child should have a favorite charity, and each of my children do. And I should also point out, so people don't question my agenda, I have all the proceeds of this are going to pediatric cancer research. I have a 10-year-old daughter who has cancer. And being a dad that needs to feel helpless, well, thank you, you didn't do it, my only way to feel less helpless is to feel like I'm just pursuing the solution, and so that's where the proceeds for this parenting book are going to. Mm. But I believe that really children are born believing that all things are possible. That's what brings magic into Santa Claus and Tooth Fairy and Easter Bunny. All things are possible, and as we get older and quote-unquote wiser, some people tend to believe that, okay, well, now in life only some things are possible. And then you run into people who are adults now, and they think very little is possible, and some of you become bitter.
Yeah,
and so all we have to do to help our children really shine is to get the heck out of their way. Let them let their passions drive them and not project, and this is very harsh to say, Tom, but I'm going to say it anyway, not to project our own fears and failures on our children. And
well, let me just give you an example here, Troy. When I was, because I would like to hear some specifics. When I was 10 years old, I was a ham radio operator. I got my my general license when I was 12 or 13, as I recall, but I'd started out as a novice a couple of years earlier. So I knew electronics, and this was back in the days of tubes and TVs and things. And I started a little business in my neighborhood where I would go around with a wagon, and I'd say, you know, I'll fix your radio or TV for you. And actually did, and made some money doing that. And, you know, my good friend of mine, Terry Applegate, he had an egg route. He was buying eggs wholesale, and he was, you know, delivering them by the dozen to people's homes. We both sold Grit for a while, which was a newspaper back in the 50s and 60s that kids could sell. So there's a lot of us who really started out as entrepreneurs as kids and did it, you know, make some money and have some fun. What are the things that you recommend today that our kids can or should be doing?
Well, first of all, in Young Bucks, there's like 60 businesses in there I put in there for kids. They all require virtually nothing to start. I mean, nothing is in like 10 bucks maybe. I can tell you in my own household, I have a 17-year-old that makes about $400 a day.
Doing Brandon, what?
He only works about a day a week. He details cars. Mm-hmm. He's loved cars even since before he had a driver's license. And it's ironic to me, only is his dad, only because he's got the sloppiest bedroom in the house. But he loves to detail cars. And so, yeah, as it turns out, he loves to put on his little headset, go out in the yard. He doesn't like to talk to people a lot. So they bring the car to the house. He cleans it up and jams to his music while he's out there and turns it over. Now, he's making more money now because he's gone to the next level, which is he's learned the power of having an employee. So he has two kids from the football team that he's taught how to do it. And so he'll bring three cars over on a Saturday. He'll never touch one of them. He'll teach his kids how to do it. He pays them 10 bucks an hour. They think they're making crazy good money. And he charges 150 a car.
And they're making good money for kids.
They are. Oh, yeah,
and
absolutely.
If he's doing a good job, I mean, there's a demand for that.
You know, all of us are working. We're not really working for money. We're working for what money gets us, which if we're doing it right, it gets us freedom and quality of life. And if we're doing it wrong, we literally give up freedom and we give up quality of life. And all I'm trying to say is let's show our children at an earlier age in their life they can have freedom and they can have a quality of life. They don't have to be a slave to a fast food joint if they don't want to be.
Yeah.
You know, my 6-year-old, he makes, he did this last week, he makes almost 75 bucks an hour. And he literally makes homemade cookies with my wife, and they stick them in a Ziploc bag. They staple a cover over, and he's printed labels off the computer. And he goes to the high school events my other children are at, and he sells them in the crowd.
That's too shabby.
It's great. I mean, and they buy all their own stuff. It was really hard to Christmas shop for these kids because they can afford to buy their own things. But they all pay tithing to the church,
yeah,
and charitable. So we are trying to keep a balance in it. They bought each other Christmas gifts. And it just does staying out of their way. There's a little girl next door. Her mom's like, I don't know what I'm going to do with her. She just spends all day on MySpace. That's all she ever does. Well, guess what she's doing now because of a quick suggestion. She's making a month, $800 a month, and she's a MySpace babysitter. There are now
basically
almost everybody in the business world now wants a MySpace presence for their business. She charges $100 for the month to keep your MySpace page fresh and current.
Oh, my.
And she had 8 people within a week. Just people in her, I think it was her church, actually, but just people who were, you know, one was a dentist, one was a chiropractor, one is an aspiring musician who has a band. And she charges $100 to babysit their MySpace page. She had 8
great ideas. Great ideas. Troy Dunn, he's the author. The book is Young Bucks, How to Raise a Future Millionaire. TroyDunn.com. Troy, thanks a lot for being with us today.
God bless.
And you too. It's great to hear from you. 16 minutes past the hour.
Closing the con in conservative. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Yes, if you want to go cool, you got to run. Oh, hey, hey, if you run. Hey, hey, if you run. Hey, hey, if you run.
And welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from Talk 1090. Our Seattle affiliate here in Seattle, Washington. And once again, thanks so much to all Paul and all the great folks here for providing us with studio space on a moment's notice. I mean, my calling Paul last night at, I don't know, midnight or something. I frankly don't know what time it was when we finally made it into Chicago, and I realized that my plane to Portland was long gone, but the Seattle flight was 3 hours delayed, and still, and they had 7 minutes before they were boarding. And, boy, we pulled this thing together. It was just amazing. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Carolyn in Michigan, in Detroit, Michigan, on the line. Hey, Carolyn.
Hello, how are you?
I am great, but I'll get better. What's up?
No, you're tired.
Yeah,
The last segment was fairly distracting and very interesting, but how did it get scheduled for today? Anyway, that's not what I'm calling about.
Well, I'll tell you why, because I don't want to do 100% all politics all the time.
Well, but
I think that there
are a big primary.
Yeah, there are other things in the world, but yeah, it was 8 minutes. We're back.
It was very interesting. Anyway, what I'm calling about is the Michigan primary. Is there not something in the federal election law that says a ballot has to be understandable and fairly votable in order for it to be legitimate? Michigan is so screwed up. The ballots have all gone out with a space for a write-in candidate with instructions on the ballot. The ballots have been printed and have gone out absentee. To do this, absentee votes will not count in the Democratic primary. I'm not sure what's going on in the Republican one, but that's neither here nor there as far as I'm concerned. However, I checked with the city clerk today. I mean, I've got a publication from the Detroit Election City Clerk Election Bureau saying, with two or three places saying how I can do a write-in candidate. It will not be counted. And I checked today, and the optical scanners will not reject a ballot that has a right candidate, even though your vote will not at that point be counted.
Right.
How is this not a violation of the federal election law?
Well, it's because primaries are staged by the states. They're not organized by the federal government. And because they are done in cooperation with the political parties, the Democratic Party had said, here's the order in which the states can have their primaries, and Michigan didn't like their order. They wanted to go earlier.
Right.
And
no, I understand all of that.
Yeah.
And I've worked for the Democratic Party and the ACLU. I have contacted both the NAACP and the ACLU. But it just seems to me that if a ballot is so fatally flawed that you can't make a legitimate decision, the election should not be allowed to go on.
Well, I agree, Carolyn, and in essence, that's what's happening here, is that because the Democratic Party isn't supporting this...
Oh, they're not only not supporting it, they've not only withdrawn our delegates, they've canceled our hotel reservations.
Wow.
How much meaner can you get?
Well, you know, yeah, meaner or just saying, hey, you know, you guys didn't play by the rules, so you're out of the game. I mean, I see this as a disaster on both sides. I see it as a PR disaster for the Democratic Party, you know, for the DNC, and I see it as a disaster for the people in Michigan. It's going to cause Republicans to be campaigning in Michigan, which is going to get a lot of Republican messages out.
Oh,
Democrats
they're
not,
all over the place.
Right, Democrats are not. Democrats are not campaigning in Michigan. There are a few Democrats who you know had allowed their names to get on there, but you know who are not essentially playing with the Democratic Party. And it's,
well, one of them is Dennis Kucinich, and I'm going to vote for him just because.
Yeah, well, his name is on the ballot in Michigan?
Yes.
Yeah, well, that might be one of the reasons why the Democratic Party would be a little upset with him. But, the bottom line here is... Yeah, you're right. The bottom line is it's a mess. It's a terrible mess, and I agree with you, and I sure hope they get this thing fixed for the next time around, because it's not serving the people of Michigan. It's not serving Democrats. It's not serving the Democratic Party. And Michigan is a really important state, not just because I was born there and I spent the first 25 years of my life, however, whatever it was there, but also and go back regularly, but also because Michigan is, it's the heartland of the industrial heartland. You know, it's a very important state. Len in New York City and suffering this. I mean, Michigan's been in a recession forever.
Are you there?
You know, yeah. Hey, Len, you're on the air in New York City.
Hi.
Got about a minute before the break here.
I've got to say, after speaking with Mike Malloy last night and thinking about it more, the, you know, what's going to make the biggest difference in November is probably whether there's war or peace. You know, we had the war, then we had a peace right afterwards while the Iraqis were waiting to see what we do. Then we had an insurgency, now it's tamped down. And you know it's not going to stay like this. Something's going to happen. And what?
No, and not just in Iraq, by the way.
Huh?
And not just in Iraq. I'm expecting fully that this administration is going to provoke something in Iran before the election.
There's a good chance of that. Anyway, you know, I was thinking that, you know, Hillary, you know, has about 45% support, I guess. I mean, I think Richardson told the people in Iowa to go with Obama. And if we just narrowed it down to any two-man race, practically, Hillary would get about 45%, which really is a strong message to Edwards at this point.
Yeah, you're suggesting that he should drop out. Well, I'll pick that up on the other side of the break. Len, thanks a lot for the call. It's 27 minutes past the hour.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Night after night, I try to make it all together. Night after night, I see you as someone I remember. You took me by surprise, opened up my eyes. Now we gotta talk this over.
34 minutes past the hour. Our last caller really raised the conundrum, and that is that there is a substantial number, a not insignificant group of Democrats and a much larger not insignificant group of independents who will not vote for Hillary Clinton. And I would add, and so his suggestion was, you know, there needs to be an anti-Hillary, a single anti-Hillary candidate in the Democratic primary so that Hillary is not the nominee. That's his position. Let me again put it right out front there that I frankly think that John Edwards would make the best president. However, I would support Hillary Clinton if she were the nominee. I don't think she's terrible. I think she's and I don't mean that as damning by faint praise. I'm not one of those people who hates Hillary or whatever. But there are people out there who do. And particularly among the independents, and that's a significant concern and a significant negative. And so his suggestion was that John Edwards should drop out and leave it to Barack Obama. Barack Obama, I would submit to you, has a similar problem. And it's not his race. Although that card will be played by the Republicans, you can bet that there's going to be those Harold Ford Jr. ads where, you know, the cute white girl's going, hey, call me Obama. Barack, you know, that kind of thing. But I don't think, frankly, that's going to play as strongly as the story is getting out of his religion. I can't tell you, and I'm getting, you know, folks in the chat room and emails from people saying the same thing, that they're getting these emails, this viral email that Obama wouldn't put his hand over his heart for the Pledge of Allegiance, which is not true. It's a lie. That he was sworn in on the Quran, which is not true. It's a lie. He was sworn in on the Bible. That he's a Muslim, not true. He's a Christian. It was Keith Ellison, the congressman from Minnesota, who's a great guy, a very progressive kid. He's been on this program a number of times, who is a Muslim, who was sworn in on the Quran that was owned by Thomas Jefferson. But Keith Ellison is not Barack Obama. They're two different people. But this email has been going around for weeks now, and it's now crossed the threshold. It's now well into the Swift Boat territory. I mean, this is way beyond, this is like John Kerry ignoring the Swift boats. This thing has become conventional wisdom. And the way I know that is, as I said last night, I'm sitting in the airport bar watching the CNN. So there's like, you know, half a dozen guys, 8-10 guys sitting at the bar there watching the CNN on the TV. In fact, we had to ask the woman, the waitress here, the bartender, to turn up the volume on the thing because everybody wanted to know what was going on, right? And it wasn't a bunch of news reporters. I mean, these were just people flying places. It wasn't all the thundering herd of political junkies leaving town. And the guy next to me goes off on this screed about how first of all, we start talking about good presidents, and he talks about how Jimmy Carter is the best president we had in the 20th century, and what a good man. He's one of the few who didn't get rich on the presidency. And how he thought, you know, well, Reagan had some good things to say, but I'm not sure that he really, you know, he left us all this debt. You know, I mean, this is a guy who has some political astuteness. He was a little older than me. I guess he's in his 60s and maybe his late 50s. Just a working class guy, you know, and sitting at the bar with me are a couple of other people, sort of the working class guy types, and then a couple of suits. And then he goes into this screed about, you know, but no way am I going to vote for the Barack Obama because, you know, he's a Muslim and he put his hand on the Quran to be sworn in and blah, 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 blah. And never once mentioned his race. But went off on this Muslim thing. And I'm telling you, this has already, at least a third of the people sitting at that bar believed that what this guy was saying was true. And I'm sitting here not identifying who I am. I'm just saying, no, it's not true. You know, it's not true. And he says, well, it says right in the email, Snopes has debunked this thing and that it's true. I said, no, go to Snopes and you'll find that it's not true. So, you know, you've got a large group of people who won't vote for Hillary. You've got a large group of people who won't vote for Barack Obama because his middle name is Hussein. And he's so new to the process, he's so new to Americans, that he's being defined by others very rapidly, very virally, very much in the background. Fox News did this whole thing about, and this is one of the reasons why Bill O'Reilly was stalking him, because he's basically freezing out Fox, because Fox News did this whole thing about how he went to a madrasa as a child, and several of their reporters used that word, and he did not go to a madrasa. He went to a public school in Indonesia. A majority of the students in that public school happened to be Muslim because Indonesia is the largest Muslim country in the world. But it was a public school. That's like saying, you know, I mean, I went to a public school in Lansing, Michigan. Most of the kids in my class were Protestants. I am a Protestant. But that's like, you know, identifying me as having gone to a religious indoctrination program for the Jimmy Swaggart bunch. He being a Protestant televangelist. I mean, It's nonsense. So Fox News was one of the early ones promoting this thing. So I would say that, you know, if you want to find the most electable of the candidates right now, I would say Barack Obama. And I've said this before. I've said this in print. It was up on Huffington Post. I think Barack Obama has the potential to be the next JFK. JFK, however, served either two or three terms in the U.S. House of Representatives and was in his second term in the United States Senate. He had a voting record. The people knew him. He was known all across this country. For years, people knew who John Kennedy was. I mean, you know, he came from the Kennedy dynasty. People don't yet know who Barack Obama is. And he will be defined, if he's the nominee, he will be defined by the Republicans in the ways that I've just described, because they're already doing it successfully. Which leaves John Edwards. And so, you know, I would say, okay, if Barack Obama and John Edwards are splitting the anti-Hillary vote and you want to have a candidate who's not Hillary Clinton, frankly, I think it should be John Edwards. But I'm not going to go to Barack Obama and say, hey, you should drop out of the race when you're way ahead of everybody else. So it's a conundrum. It's a conundrum. I don't have a therefore for it. I just, you know, this is the political lay of the land as I see it laid out. Tony in Alexandria, Virginia. Hey, Tony.
Hey, Tom. I was actually calling about that. I think there's a false choice being presented there because that's not how the primaries work. Right now, Barack Obama, I think, has 26 delegates, Hillary Clinton has 25, and John Edwards has 18. So right now, nobody is winning, and nobody has a majority. And if John Edwards stays
These are not, every one of these elections is not a winner-take-all election like the presidential election would be.
Right, and if John Edwards stays in the whole time, and he continues to get 20 to 25% of the vote the whole time, then he's going to have enough delegates come the convention that he
even if he's not going to be the nominee, people will have to make concessions to what he supports in order to get his delegates, because neither of the other two presumably will have a majority.
Right.
So I think that people really need to vote for John Edwards if they think they kind of like Barack Obama, but they think John Edwards' message of change has some things that Obama's not talking about. That makes it even more important that they stick with John Edwards now.
Yeah, and wouldn't it be cool if we had a brokered convention?
I mean, especially because, as I think I think you may have pointed out, but I know some people have, that look how much Hillary sounded like John Edwards last night. Because John Edwards is in the race.
Look how much the Republicans are sounding like John Edwards. I mean, Mike Huckabee is out there sounding like John Edwards.
Especially, but I thought it was very ironic hearing Hillary saying, I found my voice, and then turning around, and her almost her entire speech was themes lifted from Obama and Edwards, but not delivered as eloquently as either of them did.
Yeah.
So that was my suggestion. Also, I just wanted to know, do you, when you encounter people like those guys in the airport bar, do you eventually say, hey, look, if you give me your email address when I get home, I got a mountain of proof that what you're, you know, do you
try to
follow up with those people?
I actually think I convinced them that they had been lied to. I mean, you know, I was not being, you know, I can talk to people pretty reasonably, and I just said, you know, I'm sorry, it's a lie. I mean, there's a bunch of, you know, emails out there that are full of lies about every candidate. There's lies about the Republicans, there's lies about the Democrats, and I said the guy, the Muslim who had his hand on the Quran instead of the Bible was Keith Ellison from Minnesota, and that photograph where Barack Obama doesn't have his hand over his heart and all the other Democrats do was not the Pledge of Allegiance. It was, as I recall, at a baseball game. It was somebody was singing the national anthem, and it was taken in the first few seconds, and he did, you know, raise his hand up, but it was just before that happened. And this thing is just full of lies. And these lies are being used to take down Barack Obama. And by the time I was done, I think pretty much everybody at the bar got it, that I knew more than this guy did. This guy just read his email. But what concerns me is that, you know, there's not 100 clones of me or a million clones of me running around this country.
What I would hope is that if Obama were the nominee and that message was spreading around, I would hope Obama would actually challenge whoever the Republican nominee is and say, look, people are saying this on your behalf, and you know it's not true.
He needs to be challenging it right now.
Yeah, well, no.
I'm telling you, Tony, he needs to be challenging it right now, because people form opinions, and once those opinions are formed, look at it. You still have a third of the country who thinks that there's weapons of mass destruction in Iraq.
Right, but what I'm saying is right now, he can challenge it all he wants, but there's nobody on the other side who has to take responsibility for that message.
Yeah.
Once there is a Republican nominee, that person can be challenged. Is this true or not? Say this is true. If you believe this is true,
That's a good point. Then you can personalize it. But I'm telling you, the damage is going to be, it's already done. Tony, thanks a lot for the call. You made a lot of very good points. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where despair is not an option. Get active.
As we lie beneath the stars, we realize how small we are. If they could love like you and me, imagine what the world could be.
Nine and a half minutes before the hour. I have a note here from Amy. I don't out people's last names. I get emails. She says, yeah, Tom, I was talking to a close Democratic Hillary-supporting relative who said that she knew for a fact, knew in quotes, that Obama was raised a Muslim. I was so horrified. Thanks for turning. Thanks so much for turning cartwheels to be there today. Amy. I have heard this from so many people now. It's not just the guys in the bar last night. That was the iconic moment. But and the reason why, of course, is because 6 months ago, nobody in America knew who outside of Illinois, nobody in America knew who Barack Obama was. So that's going to be a real significant challenge for him. Carol in Vancouver, Washington. Hey, Carol. Welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hey, Carol. You're on the air, and thanks for listening on KPOJ.
Thank you for taking my call. This is the first time I've ever called anyone, and I wanted to let you know this. I am, first of all, if I was going to select on a purist, fantastic candidate, it would be Dennis Kucinich. Realistically, I know
so would
that
I.
The press would just vilify that guy to death. Then the next thing, I'm a woman, and I like what and I feel strongly that Hillary has been held to a different standard than any guy. Even in the New York race, she was held to a different standard.
I agree.
She works really, really hard. I feel that in the Clinton administration, she was the most liberal. And her, when Bill Clinton put some of her ideas forward as far as appointments and early stages and that, and if he got too much flack or pushback, he retreated from that. But I'm not so sure if she would. I feel
to what extent do you think that she was on the board of Walmart for, I think, 6 years? I mean, that kind of thing, you know, her corporate connections are going to be thrown at her as the nominee.
Well, I'm sure they are. I'm sure they are. But they've thrown everything in the world at her, and just about every possible thing you can. Conversely, there was a white or a black woman with as little experience, with not even hardly 2 years, as Barack Obama has, she would, and she said, I'm going to run for president of the United States, she would be laughed out of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing with Oprah Winfrey. If that was a white guy with as little experience as he, but even though he's a good talker, good speaker, and all the rest, I doubt she'd be putting all her money and
well, you don't know. I mean, first of all, Barack Obama isn't totally lacking in political experience. He's been around Illinois for a long time, and Oprah Winfrey is from Illinois. So I know there's a perception among some people that she was only.
Then I had to look at his voting record in Illinois, which is present. He didn't take a stand on many things. His health care program, again, came up short. So I say, where's the change now? Here he said he wasn't going to vote for any money for the Iraq war, and he's voted for all of them, except for these very last ones, which the Democrats have not voted for. But he really, whatever she has voted for, he said, me too.
So bottom line, Carol, you have some concerns about Barack Obama. Your vote would go for whom today?
I want a woman to in charge. I do.
For Hillary
I want
Clinton.
To see what a woman could do.
Okay.
I think we haven't had a chance. And I don't have doubts about her, and I don't have doubts about her strength. I have many doubts about whatever direction Barack Obama would go to. And I got it,
Carol. Thank you very much. I got it, and you said it very well. And oddly, you said the exact same thing my taxi driver said yesterday, who was a man. Mark in Los Angeles. Hey, Mark.
Hi, I'll try to make it quick. Keep pursuing the Iran crossing the demarcation zone. I've had experience interviewing soldiers who were on the South Korean border who actually there was firefights that were never reported during the 90s. Some of the soldiers actually lost their lives and there was some intimidation by both sides that just kept escalating.
You think we're trying to provoke Iran into a response of some sort?
Yeah, and I mean, we've been caught with our pants down behind the lines in Venezuela. Hugo Chavez, there was an Australian video crew that happened to be there that caught some of our agents doing stuff.
Well, we have agents inside Iran right now, and we're open about it. I mean, the funding discussion happened. So yeah, you're right. And we are trying to provoke Iran, and you know whether this incident recently in the Persian Gulf is that or not, time will tell. But it's something to keep an eye on. Well said. Thank you very much. Carolyn in Kentucky. Hey, Carolyn.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Love your show. I signed up for Air America 2.5 years ago just to listen to, XM Radio, just to listen to you guys. And
thank you.
Even bought a new car and put it in there so I can listen to it when I'm on the road. I'm calling about, I got another email today about Barack Obama. Mentioning that his name now, middle name is now Mohammed, and also the main.
So the lies are morphing.
Yeah, and it's more about his church that he goes to, and they have a non-committal, negotiable commitment to Africa.
Yeah, I got that one, too. He goes to a black church that's really all about Africa. It's not about African-Americans, et cetera, et cetera. And that's all nonsense, too.
I mean, you know, I don't answer a lot of these, but the person who sent me this, because it was forwarded to that person, and then, you know, on and on.
But see, the only reason that these things can survive is because, by and large, people don't know who he is.
Right, and
So your bottom line is we should be giving our contributions to our favorite Democrats.
Well, and I did. I did. I took your advice, and I made a contribution to John Edwards. He's my man, and I'd love to see him be our president.
Yeah, good on you, Carolyn. I think all of us should be out there. I'm not a fan of voting with your dollars, as you know. I don't think that's democracy. But contributing to campaigns, yeah. Even if it's $10, even if $15, $20, it all counts. And all the candidates' websites are very, very easy to find, whoever may be your favorite candidate. It's one way to get involved. 57 minutes past the hour. Don't forget, democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit TomHartmanRadio.com.